Good afternoon. I'm Rhonda Fineman, and this is the Healthy Options program right here on WERU. Our topic today on Healthy Options is nonviolent communication. And we welcome back our guest, Peggy Smith, co-founder of the Maine Nonviolent Communication Network. Peggy Smith is also a certified trainer with the International Center for Nonviolent Communication. She's worked both in Maine and internationally with the Seeds of Peace International Camp, sharing nonviolent communication skills with educators from the Middle East and South Asia. She holds a master's degree in literacy and language arts from the University of Pennsylvania and has taught in public schools and alternative schools for 32 years before she began to devote herself full-time to nonviolent communication training. A student of mindfulness since 1991, Peggy Smith was ordained as a teacher of Zen master and peace activist Thich Nhat Hanh and has incorporated mindfulness practice in the teaching of nonviolent communication. Welcome back to Healthy Options, Peggy Smith. So glad you have made the time to speak with us today about this vitally important topic, especially today in today's world and into the situation that we find ourselves in right now.
Well, hi, Rhonda. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show with you today.
So, we have to start at the beginning. We've had conversations about nonviolent communication. Many people in the last few weeks have come to me and said, how am I going to communicate with people who we diametrically disagree with and are feeling, I'm just never going to talk to anybody except my small circle. And I said, well, we'll see how realistic that is for the next number of years. And they laugh. But that was the motivation. So perhaps you can set us up a little bit of what nonviolence communication is and how these skills can help us.
I'll do my best, Rhonda. So I'd like to start with an actual physical exercise that I'm hoping people will be able to feel in their bodies what it is we're going to be talking about for this show. And anybody will be able to do this except those who are driving. If you are driving, please don't do this exercise. Wait until you are not driving. And it goes like this. And Rhonda, I'd like you to do it along with the listeners so that you actually might be willing to share what you notice while you're experiencing it.
Absolutely. And I do want to tell people you will not miss anything. This will be recorded, so you'll be able to go back and do this exercise.
So I'd like you to take one hand and make a fist, a really strong fist. Make it as strong as you can. And now with the other hand, I want you to pry open that fist. Go ahead. Pry it open with your other hand. And then notice, what does the fist do when the other hand tries to pry it open? What do you notice, Rhonda?
Wow. I got stronger. The fist got stronger.
Got tighter, didn't it?
It got, wow. Ouch. Yes.
Okay. So now, everyone, just shake your hands for just a moment. Okay, and now, part two. Make the fist again, as tight as you want. Make that fist. And now, with the other hand, gently embrace the fist. Gently, lovingly, with care. And what do you notice about the fist?
It's softened.
It's softened. Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you, Peggy.
And this is a bodily metaphor, one might say, for what happens when we are trying to change ourselves or change the other. The more we are trying to change, the tighter the talons clench. When we can embrace parts of ourselves with true loving kindness, I don't mean kind of sappy or even, you know, we say, I'm going to be loving and kind to myself. I'm going to go to the store and buy chocolate. Okay, That may or not really be kind, but it's how we're conditioned to use chemicals to shift our inner awareness. It's different when I can embrace the parts of myself that are tight. And in a few moments, we can do a little exercise to help do that. But it's, yes, people are so desperate. Teach me how to talk to people who are idiots, right? And there you go. There's the trying to pry open the fist. And it's my experience, it doesn't work. No one has ever in my entire life, and I'm 72, has ever said, thank you for showing me the errors of my ways and by educating me and giving me information that I don't believe in or trust. Thank you so much. I see that I was totally on the wrong path. It's never happened to me. So I have been on a quest for how do I change my inner voice? And then how can I support perhaps others who actually think differently than I do? Support, I don't mean agree with. It's very different to see the humanity in the other, even when you disagree with them.
Seeing the humanity in the other.
So, I have a poem about that.
Please.
If you're willing to hear it. Those of you who may know, Thich Nhat Hanh, who was a Zen master that came out of the country of Vietnam, and he was a gardener, a great champion of mindfulness, and a poet. And this poem was written by him after some of his students were murdered.
Oh my.
And this poem is called Recommendation. Promise me this day, promise me now, while the sun is overhead, exactly at the zenith, promise me. Even when they strike you down with a mountain of hatred and violence, even as they step on you and crush you like a worm, even as they dismember and disembowel you, remember, brothers and sisters, remember, man is not our enemy. The only thing worthy of you is compassion, invincible, limitless, unconditional. Hatred will never let you face the beast in man. One day, when you face this beast alone, with your courage intact, your eyes kind, untroubled, even as no one sees them, out of your smile will bloom a flower, and those who love you will behold you across 10,000 worlds of birth and death. Alone again, I will go on with head bent, knowing that love has become eternal. On the long, rough road, the sun and the moon will continue to shine.
Wow.
And this, Rhonda, is a poem that I go back to for redirection.
And that was called Recommendation by
yes.
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yes.
And you go back to remind yourself that it is not the human, it is not the person. It's what? Greed? Anger? What? What is it, that delusion?
Delusion, wrong perceptions.
That's right.
And I'm going to say from a nonviolent communication perspective, our strong need to belong, that humans actually all share a very strong desire to belong. And sometimes when I'm surrounded by people who have certain perspectives, I embrace them because I want to have that belonging.
So we lose discernment. Where does discernment come in this conversation? Or when do we say, this is the group? Yes, this is these are the values, or where do we get these words? We're in what are our needs versus interests, for instance?
Well, not as you and I have talked about in the past, nonviolent communication is based on a belief that all humans share certain qualities that the creator, Marshall Rosenberg, called universal human needs. Other people call them universal human motivators. They motivate what I do. And when I want to say I call it my spiritual path to constantly come back to the humanity of the person or people in front of me, whether I agree with them or disagree with them. It's a choice. And it's a choice that I do independent of whether they are choosing to see the humanity in me. My choice is to, whenever I'm resourced enough,
And that
sometimes,
means
what does that mean? It means, am I connected to that intention? And there are many things that can under-resource me. And that can be how I'm eating or how much news I'm consuming. How am I capable of handling hearing of all the suffering in the world and stay connected to this? And if I'm not, then I know, okay, it's not about being ignorant, but it is about noticing how much news can I absorb and stay centered.
stay centered. So what are some basic needs that we have? What, feeling safe? What would be a need? Obviously water, food, air, clean air. But what? Being heard? Is that a human need? Being understood? Is that a need or a feeling? Or yes.
Well, I consider all of those universal human needs. And it's to hear and be heard. Okay? It's to see and be seen. So, and it doesn't mean that in every moment we get that. It means we're seeking it. So I am seeking to be seen and heard, and I am seeking to be able to see and hear others. It's just that our culture doesn't actually give us many skills for doing those things. So that's why I love sharing nonviolent communication and also the added piece of what I call practical neuroscience. My teacher, Sarah Payton, calls it resonant language. These are additional strategies that I can use to learn to talk to myself with kindness and to listen and speak to others with kindness.
What might some of those be? How would we learn those? What do we need to know?
There's such big questions
Yeah.
because
I'm
it's both.
giving you lots of room, Peggy.
Okay.
We can narrow
All right. Well, this
it
is great. How about we do another exercise?
Ah, well, there you go.
All right.
And by the way, if you have just tuned in before our exercise, if you have just tuned in, I am speaking with Peggy Smith, who is a teacher of nonviolent communication, started the Maine Nonviolent Communication Program and group, and is also a teacher in the tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thank you, Rhonda. And I want to add one more thing, which is 3 years ago, I started a nonprofit to bring this work to schools for free, not for the students, but for the staff. And that nonprofit is called Empathy for Everyone. So if anybody's listening who either works in a school or knows people who work in schools and would like to have this come to their schools for their staff, they can be in touch. How about if I give the exercise, Rhonda?
Yes, let's do that. Okay. Okay.
So does, I'll speak to you, but really I'm speaking to everyone. Do you have an inner voice that talks to you? Rhonda, do you have an inner
voice?
Yes,
I do.
Okay. And does it always talk to you with kindness and gentleness? Or sometimes is it harsh, humiliating, and degrading?
Yes. Unkind thoughts, unkind inner voice.
Yeah. And is it any wonder that we sometimes have challenges coming up with kind conversations to people when we can't even have them in our to ourselves? So this is an exercise that I am, to help us develop a more kind inner voice. So one of the things we study are what are strategies we've learned that actually block empathy for ourselves and others. And these things that block empathy are things like educating and fixing, minimizing, diagnosing, spiritualizing, storytelling. These are all things that sort of block our sense of empathy. And yet, this is what we've been given as a tool to communicate with people, especially when they're having uncomfortable experiences. So, are you willing to play a little game with me, Rhonda?
Absolutely. And I just want to get a little bit more detail about some of the things that you said. So, sympathizing, oh, that's terrible, can actually not be helpful.
Mm. Yeah, right. I know I didn't do the whole list because people are listening. They don't have that sheet. If people would like to get a list of the blocks to empathy, they can email me and I'll be happy to send it to them.
Okay. Well, we'll do that. But I'm totally here to give too much information about my inner voice. So I'm ready to share and be vulnerable. Let's do it, Peggy.
All right. So wondering if you'd be willing to finish us this sentence. I am irritated about. And just anything you're irritated about, perhaps not your most tender thing, something that if people saw you walking down the street, you wouldn't mind them knowing because they heard about it on the radio. And then I'm going to respond with a block. And then I want you just to notice, what does it feel like in your body to receive this block?
Okay, this is right outside my house. There's a stop sign. I am really irritated when people don't stop at that stop sign.
Oh, you know, in 30 years, Rhonda, you're really not going to care about this.
Yes, I will, because someone can like crash right into the next car coming up the street.
So I saw you put your hands on your chest and you kind of went, Great. Thank you. Now, we're going to do the same thing again, and I'm going to respond in a different way.
Okay. I am so irritated when people do not stop at that stop sign. It's so dangerous.
Rhonda, of course you feel irritated.
I know.
So just notice, how does that feel in your body?
Much better. Totally. I didn't feel defensive. I didn't have to explain. I could just say, yes, thank you. That was so much nicer.
This is a verbal way to do that gentle hand around the fist. Right? This is a verbal way to do that. And this is how we can start to train ourselves in our own minds when we feel irritated, frustrated, angry, annoyed, scared, joyful, delighted. It's not only unpleasant things. That you first start with the person's name. So if you're talking to yourself, you use your own name. and say, of course you
feel
it.
That way. Of course you
whatever
feel that
it
way.
Is. And you just name the feeling. Okay.
Right.
Why am I talking about this in regards to talking to my neighbor, you know, who has a lawn sign that I don't like? It's because when I notice myself clenching, when I notice that I'm having negative judgments about it, instead of trying to change my mind, instead of trying to say, oh, Peggy, you should be a more enlightened spiritual person than that. You shouldn't have thoughts like that. You shouldn't feel tight and upset. The first thing I do is say, Peggy, of course you feel tight and upset.
Of course you feel tight and upset.
This lowers the tension in my own body. I'm cycling back to when you said, how do we know if we're resourced? How do we get resourced? We get resourced by acknowledging our reality. So for those of us who are feeling confused, angry, scared, the first step, it's not the only step, but the first step is to say your own name. And of course you feel whatever it is. And just notice, the image in my chest right now is an old-fashioned clock that you used to, like, turn them, wind them, right? And then they run for a while, right? And what happens is when I'm starting to have those angry, fearful thoughts, the inside my chest, the clock is getting wound tight. And when I can pause and with total softness and care, say, Peggy, of course you feel whatever, it starts to loosen up that tight coil. Then I'm more likely to have the capacity to be present with someone I disagree with. So, excuse the expression, but it's kind of a weave I'm doing here today of many threads, and I'm going to try to keep showing how they are all fitting together. Is this working for you, Ron?
This is absolutely, I think, what is going to be helpful as we move forward. Yes, I think this is, I feel that this is very, 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 very beneficial. So what is empathy? What is it? What is it that we talked about? We've said these words, humanity and empathy and recognizing. How do we touch that or know what that might be?
Well, for me, the problem with the word empathy is that it's starting to have many meanings. So there are many people, you can watch many TED Talks and YouTube videos about empathy, and they're not all talking about the same thing. And in fact, I have a book that I bought once called The Neuroscience of Empathy. And the very first chapter is all about these scientists who were studying the research on empathy and found out that 9 different research projects all defined empathy differently. So how can we draw any conclusions? So I really enjoy, as I said, I've been also studying with the neuroscience educator, Sarah Payton, and she started to call what we usually call empathy, warm accompaniment. And I love that as a term because it really, to me, demonstrates what we're trying to do. Can I warmly accompany this situation, whether it's inside of me or outside of me? And now she's shifted and she calls it resonance. And I understand why she made the shift. I have a preference for warm accompaniment, but she shifted to resonance because she's a cello player. And what she noticed is when you have two cellos next to each other, and if you start playing one of those cellos, a note on one of those cellos, the cello next to it will also start making that sound, even though no one's playing it. So that's an image of, to me, what empathy is. And if I hold that I will be empathic to you, if you will be empathic to me, then, it's a tit for tat. And to me, that's not, I have no power over what anybody else does. The only person I have any power over at all, if we believe that we have internal power, is myself. And what I want to do is contribute to more harmony, But more, no, because it's not just harmony. Because, okay, I want harmony. It means I go along with whatever. And, okay, there's harmony, but there's also damage. So how do we create more harmony, authentic harmony, authentic peace, where all beings are cared for? That's the world I want to build. And as Iris DeMent said in one of her songs, the world I want, I'm going to work towards making that world, whether I ever see it or not.
Earlier, you mentioned the sense of belonging. So that sense of warm resonance and belonging, that warm resonance and feeling part of something, am I confusing, or how can we tease this out? This idea of warm resonance, I can't help but get to this sense that some of the things that we're going to converse with others about, we could get caught up in some details that will take us away from belonging and empathy and warm accompaniment. Mm. So I guess it's going back to that is, and I mentioned discernment. How do we practice this?
Mm. So in a way, when you were talking, the image I had were those Russian stacking dolls, right? Where there's the little eye in the middle, and then there's bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's when I'm under-resourced, it's the little one in the middle, the eye. I need this. I need this. Okay. And then the more I am resourced, the bigger the picture I'm able to hold. And so belonging might be, well, I'm going to belong to this group who believe this. And then is that big enough? Because does that include my neighbors? So what would be the bigger stacking circle that would include my neighbors? And not only my human neighbors, but all the other neighbors that I have. Some are four-legged, some are winged, some are finned, right? Some are none of those, right? So I have a lot of neighbors. So how big can my vision be? What am I willing to take in? This is why practicing nonviolent communication or mindfulness is a spiritual practice, and it's not always easy. And learning ways to care for myself helps me care for myself the little, and I've never said this before. I've never had this imagery before, Rhonda, so I'm really having a fun time. It's caring for that little doll in the middle so that it can begin to see that it belongs and belongs and belongs and belongs and belongs to bigger and bigger and bigger circles.
Mm. So the
now,
more, yes, go.
There's a group I have not delved into yet, but it has just recently come to my attention. And that if the listeners are interested in particularly how do I talk to people who have very different political or social beliefs than I do, I want to recommend this to them because I think it's going to be really juicy and I'm really looking forward to it. And it's called We Are Braver Angels. And they have a survey at the We Are Braver Angels site that you begin to do a self-assessment about your beliefs about the people who are in your group and your beliefs about the people who are in the other group. Because as long as we have certain beliefs and biases, many of which we don't even know, then they are affecting how we connect. So becoming much clearer about the biases that I carry or the beliefs that I carry. In Buddhism, we might call it a mental formation. What mental formations do I carry towards them? And you know who them are, right? And your them and my them may not be the same them. So, but we all have them in our lives. And this group's work is to help us really begin to be honest with ourselves about where our boundaries are right now, to see if we can shift our boundaries a bit in a way that helps our communities be more resilient, really.
That sounds great. So that's We Are Braver Angels.
Yes.
We Are Braver Angels. That'll be something to explore. And I want to get back to what you're working with in the schools with the staff, really coming back to these kinds of understanding of the teachers themselves. That's how you move forward to help the kids. Or yes, that's how you're teaching, and that's how we are teaching ourselves and each other.
Exactly. And I want to just be clear that it's not just teachers, but administrators, educational support staff, bus drivers, secretaries, lunch people. I don't care. If you work in a school, you need support. Because working in schools is incredibly stressful. I worked in schools for 32 years. So I understand, these are my people. They belong to me, whether they know it or not, right? And so I have a great desire to help people take better care of their nervous systems. And I know people, when adults who work with younger people absorb something that works for them, they'll figure out how they want to share it.
That's beautiful. What's the name of the program?
Empathyforeveryone.com. No, .org. Sorry. Empathyforeveryone.org is our email.
Okay.
I mean, our website.
Our website. If you have just joined us, I am speaking with Peggy Smith about her work in teaching nonviolent communication skills in Maine and internationally and in the schools. I'm Rhonda Fineman, and this is WERU Community Radio, and this is Healthy Options. So empathy needs, human needs. So with this, we cross cultures. We are humans. We need, our needs are similar.
Yes. It's a plain and simple one for me. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And conflict. So many of us have been taught that conflict is bad or scary, or let's not do conflict. Whatever you do, yeah, no conflict. This is a technique. This understanding, this getting deeper into ourselves and understanding that as that image of taking what we think is the other and embracing in a way that doesn't mean agreeing, as a way to help us with conflict. Speak more about how nonviolent communication talks about that.
Well, of course, for many of us, conflict is dangerous. It sets off old memories. And some of those memories are not even ours. So I want us to, science now shows us that we genetically inherit certain trauma markers from our ancestors. So sometimes it may not even be our life experience that directly taught us conflict is dangerous, but we inherited something in our DNA that forms a reaction within us. I mean, because let's face it, North America is filled with conflict. Whether you were one of the original people who were here, there was a lot of conflict for you. And why did many people come here from across the ocean? Because of conflict where they were. So conflict can be dangerous. And our nervous systems can react to that. At the same time, well, I think also we live in a culture that really promotes winning and losing. And so conflict means either I'm going to win, but then someone might hate me for it, or I'm going to lose and I'll pay it in a different way, right? Either way, though, I pay. So It is about reframing the fact that we don't all have to agree to actually communicate. And what can happen out of that kind of communication is that new strategies unfold for everybody. And that's one of the things that my business, Clarity Services, offers, a process called dynamic facilitation, where a group of people who, you know, have some disagreements or having a hard time seeing things in the same way. These could be the board of an organization, or board of a nonprofit, or a group of community members who want to really begin to really hear each other so that new strategies might come forward. There are many, many processes out there. And
what do you call it? Dynamic
facilitation.
Facilitation.
Dynamic facilitation.
So approaching a conversation, sometimes you cannot do it alone. It's too big.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, that's what things like mediation or facilitation is all about, is especially if you can have someone who's multi-partial. You know, we used to say we need somebody who's impartial. But, you know, none of us are impartial because we're alive, you know. So what we want is someone who can be multi-partial, hold everyone with care and respect, and help everyone hear each other.
That's, you know, the sense of holding conflicting position, quote, positions, conflicting ideas at the same time. People are suffering. I am suffering. However, I can also experience joy. That's a conflict. Wait a minute. How can I be happy? Why should I have a birthday party when X, Y, and Z is happening, or also in my life, X, Y, and Z is happening? But we can hold that. Or can we?
Well, that's one of the very deep teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, who grew up in Vietnam when there was a lot of conflict between the Vietnamese and the French. And then, of course, becoming a young adult at the time of the war with the United States. He's no stranger to suffering. And yet one of his deepest teachings is, in every moment, there are causes and conditions for our happiness. Now, I want to say, Rhonda, that it may not be like, oh, I'm going to have a party, woohoo, like that.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's, and yet it's, what is it for me that I can be grateful for right now in this moment, to remind myself again, to loosen up the tight winding of the clock in my chest? How do I help loosen up the tight coils? Taking a breath and saying, how am I being supported? Where do I belong? What is working? And it's not to say, it's not to say I don't take a position and saying, this is not okay. This is not okay. You know, I like to joke, but it's not really a joke. When I introduce myself to a new class, one of the things I ask people to share is something about you we can't tell just by looking at you. And my favorite one to use for myself is, I've only been arrested twice. And I always watch a few heads on Zoom kind of shake just a little bit. And both those times is because my government was choosing to do something that I just couldn't say yes to. So I had to figure out how to say no. But I want to say no out of love, not out of hatred. When I feel angry, when I feel rage, here is my question. What is it I love so much? Because anger and rage is often fueled by love. But I'm not acculturated to think about that. So can I pause and look inside to reflect with calm, quiet, perhaps, what is it that I love? And hold that curiosity. It may take time, may take hours or days before it comes forth. Oh, this is what I really love. But then how do I go about moving towards what I love? This is what I want to do.
How do I move towards what I really love?
Yes.
And move from that place, which then, as the poem that we started with, those who are just joining us, we read a Thich Nhat Hanh poem, Remembrance, that brought us into the idea that it is not it is not the human being that is your enemy. It is the greed, the delusion, the
misperceptions.
So that's what we're talking about right now when we talk about embracing that conflict to move from that place. So
yes, and to express my to express to whoever it is I want to express what it is that I have concerns about, but in a way that increases the understanding, increases the love, that increases someone else's willingness to even hear me. And this takes time and practice, and sometimes I don't do it very well. But I have some people in my life who think very differently than I do. Very differently. And yet we have certain things we bond over, we agree on certain things. But every now and again, we have conversations where we talk about the things that we don't agree with. But being able to listen and hear and make connections between what they think and what I think has, over the years, opened up some opportunities for me to be able to express in ways that I don't always get shut down. And it takes a lot of practice.
I was going to say the practice and listening. What we throw that word around. We must listen well. We must listen. What's there are different kinds of listening. How are you listening? What does listening mean?
Yes, exactly. And to me, I like to think of it as, which hemisphere of my brain am I listening from? So our instrumental hemisphere, which is primarily the left hemisphere. It's not exclusive, but primarily our instrumental hemisphere is about fixing, understanding, organizing, agreeing or disagreeing, making things right or wrong. Am I listening from that place? I agree, I disagree. They're angels, they're evil. It's like, this is my instrumental hemisphere talking. Whereas my relational hemisphere is listening for what is it that's important to that person? What is it that they care about? Even though they're saying it in a way that, ooh, my left hemisphere is like going, can I listen for what's underneath that? What do they love? What do they care about? Even though their strategies are radically different than mine. So, yeah, it's not just listening. Am I listening to find a point that I can prove that I'm right? Or am I listening for what's really important to them? What do they really care about? And I'll just throw this wrinkle in. Often people say, well, they want power and control. And in my world, power and control are not needs. Power and control are strategies. And sometimes it's when you listen deep enough, it can be really surprising what needs are underneath the strategies of power and control. It can be safety. It can be love. It can be belonging. It's amazing, but it takes takes practice. And also, I just, since this is going out into radio land and I don't know who's listening to this, it's not that we therefore stay in situations where we are physically endangered. It's not talking about that. So if I have a sense that I or those I love are in danger, I don't need, it's not the time to be sort of saying, oh, I wonder what's really important. I should be more open-hearted and care and help them. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I want to really be clear that people hear that. But somebody else, you know, one of those multipartial people, can they help a person who's doing harm begin to hear what needs are important to them?
That's where the therapy comes in, and for some. But after, yes, not doing damage. I love that. Thank you for that clarification, by the way. Well, but if you have just tuned in, this is the Healthy Options Program on WERU Community Radio. I'm Rhonda Feynman. We're discussing nonviolent communication. We're discussing empathy and resonance and how to communicate with our guest, Peggy Smith, co-founder of the Maine Nonviolent Communication Network, and also a founder and part of the empathyforeveryone.org organization. So yes, there are times when there's a time for this and there's a time for a different kind of action and a different kind of intervention. That would be to protect somebody, to keep somebody out of harm's way.
We react. Why? Because we want to contribute to life. We want to serve life. Let me share a little story.
Please.
It happened recently. I was out on a hike with a friend, and we were walking past this house that on the front lawn there was a sign that said, no trespassing. And then it said, do you understand English, or do you need to hear? And then there was a picture of an AK-47 or whatever those, you know.
Oh my goodness.
Are, right?
Yes. Right.
So, yeah, this is, I'm like, so we were able to make opinions about the person who lived in that house. And we went off on our walk and then we came back. And as we're coming back, it's this house on an old dirt road across, and there were in this house's yard more cats than I've ever seen in one place in my entire life. And when we were walking back, there was a cat and a little kitten on the other side of the road. And out comes this person calling to the cat and the kitten in the sweetest, most gentle way. Come on, you know, I forget what he's saying. And then, you know, so the cat comes, but the kitten, you know, doesn't know any better. So he just very gently, quietly, sweetly walks across the road, picks up that little kitten, says, oh, you shouldn't be over here. It's dangerous over here. And he's carrying it back over to his house. This is our, do you understand English or do you need, you know, person? And so, to me, this is just like such a reminder. Oh, yes, I can have judgments about people by the clothes they wear or how they drive their car or what kind of car they drive. I have judgments about people. And then can I remember, oh, left hemisphere, you're just trying to keep me safe? What's going to really contribute is if I can see each person for the human that they are.
The incongruities, or the congruities, or the complexity that the holding of all of these seeming contradictions. Now, that loving cat person, little kitten, wants to keep that for everyone. So don't have this dangerous person come on my property. I don't know. What is, I'm making that up. I don't know. What could be in the contradiction? I don't know. Or it's the kitten's good, but the other is not. Whoever the other is for them.
That many of us have learned that cats and dogs are wonderful and humans are dangerous. And that has to do with, again, our personal history or our ancestral history, whether we basically trust humans or we don't. And You know, I want to, as I say that, I feel a sadness in my chest. How sad that many of us, for good reasons, have learned not to trust other people. And we can change that.
And then there could be, I don't trust, so I need some other or some big authority, something to protect me. I don't know.
Oh, we all want to trust and we all want safety. And so if for some reason we don't experience that, we will seek it out in other ways. And I think that is one of the reasons why authoritarian figures arise and gain so much power, because people are looking to belong and they are looking for safety and they are looking for meaning and purpose. Sometimes my meaning and purpose can come from being swept up in hating such and such, whatever the such and such is. That contributes to my sense of meaning and purpose. And, you know, I've seen it over and over again, people shifting that and seeing, oh, that's this size Russian doll, but I can pick a bigger one. Stacking doll. Maybe I ought to say stacking doll so we don't get into any kind of political whatever.
Right. And we were talking about those dolls that come right in together, and then you get that little one and the big one. And yes. Yeah. Yeah. And isn't that something that we all fit in, though? It really, all those dolls are just fitting right into each other.
Yes.
So we have to look at when we're talking about our, when we're talking about our connections, we're talking about listening. Are we listening? How are we listening? Are we listening to truly understand? Are we listening to what we're going to say next, to wait for them to stop so we can tell them what's really the truth? are we listening to make them change? How does that fit into nonviolent communication?
Well, nonviolent communication was actually developed by Marshall Rosenberg to help groups doing social justice work cooperate better within themselves. Because what he noticed was that within groups doing really important work, often there started to be infighting, backbiting, splintering. And so he really wanted to create a mechanism for talking about challenging things in a way that we stay connected instead of splintering apart. So that was part of its original inception. So it's not listening in order to get you to agree with me. And yes, I've done this work with people who come from countries that are literally at war with each other. And being able to hear someone's perspective, which of course will be different from my own, because I've been taught something totally different. But I hear your perspective. And then when it's my turn, instead of sharing my counter argument, I start with, well, this is what I'm hearing you say. So I very succinctly get the gist of what someone shared. And then put in, well, it's not what I believe. And yet hearing it's true for you, I'm wondering if this is what's important to you. Like community, safety, well-being. You know, I'm making guesses for what's important to you. What are some of those universal human needs underneath your strategy? And only when you get to yes,
yes, you heard what I was saying.
Where that person agrees, yes, you're understanding me, you're getting me. Only then might I cycle back to, well, are you open to hearing how I see it or how I experience it? And then waiting to hear either a yes or a no. Because just because I've heard you does not obligate someone to hear me.
That's a hard one, isn't it?
Well, if we care about respect, and consideration. It's not that others need to respect and consider me. It's how do I offer respect and consideration? How do I manifest a bigger container of respect and consideration that we can all live in? Because it's my belief that it's like the long game, and I say this with a little trepidation because, you know, it's not like I don't understand that climate catastrophe is happening. So I don't know how much long game humans have, but it doesn't matter to me. As long as I'm here, I want to contribute to creating an ethos of respect and consideration. And one way I do that is to offer it, not insist that I receive it.
So having a communication to understand and know that and accept that that may not be reciprocal.
And it's sometimes not reciprocal in the moment, but experience is that sooner or later, it comes back.
By practice.
By practice, yes.
Well, we have literally a minute. This has been so important. And so we will have to, I believe we're going to have to leave it there. Tell me, yes, we have a whole exercise to do, but I think we just did it without the formality of it. But Peggy, this has been so important. So important. And continued. I think, yes,
can
go
I
ahead.
A very short poem? A
very short.
Okay. This is called For Warmth, also a Thich Nhat Hanh poem. I hold my face in my two hands. No, I'm not crying. I hold my face in my two hands to keep the loneliness warm. Two hands protecting, two hands nourishing, two hands preventing my soul from leaving me in anger.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thich Nhat Hanh, beautiful. You see, the bells are ringing here in honor of Thich Nhat Hanh and your work. Our guest today on Healthy Options has been Peggy Smith, certified trainer with the International Center for Nonviolent Communication. Thank you so much for being with us here today on Healthy Options. You can find links to the show, other information that was mentioned, other shows that we have done with Peggy Smith at the Public Affairs Archives of healthyoptions.weru.org. Also, as I said, hear the previous Healthy Options programs. Thank you, Joel Mann and Amy Brown of WERU for engineering support. Petra Hall is our co-producer. To Deborah Owen and Kate Weiss on this particular program as assistant contributors. And as always, to all of our WERU listeners and supporters, this is Rhonda Feynman wishing you the best in health.